Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
High-altitude balloonists gathered in Pella over the weekend. Who were they, and what were they doing? Let's go in-depth with Mike Morgan, President and Technical Coordinator of Pella Explorers Near Space, and Paul Verhaeghe with Near Space Systems, Idaho. Well, Mike, quite an event you have here in Pella over the weekend. By the time this airs, it'll be over, but you're launching balloons. Can you tell us about it?
Yes, this is called the Great Plains Super Launch. It's an event that's held annually at various locations, usually in the Midwest, as far west as Colorado. Pella's kind of the east side of where we've had our conferences. But it's made up of groups all over the nation. In fact, we have a gentleman from Great Britain this year attending. And we're all interested in promoting STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, through different school systems and through different ways. But we use helium weather balloons, relatively large weather balloons, as our hands-on method to get students all the way from the grade schools into graduate school interested with some hands-on opportunities to learn how they can use and they can understand technology as doing experiments and doing experiments that are a lot of fun when you get to launch a high-altitude balloon.
Well, and speaking of experiments and technology, Paul, you were showing me some of this equipment. That's pretty neat. I don't know, maybe a laundry basket size. What do you call that?
That's my near space capsule.
That's your near space
that's the capsule.
How cool is it?
It's a poor man's spacecraft.
That's
right. It has to function in a near vacuum at extremely cold temperatures. And at those altitudes, you see the curvature of the earth and the sky is black. So really, it's kind of a satellite that I made on my kitchen counter, on the kitchen table. And we're going to launch on a weather balloon to 85,000 feet or higher.
85,000 feet, did you say?
That's correct, 85,000 feet or higher.
Yeah, we really, really shoot for 100,000 feet. We're well into the stratosphere, and when you're in the stratosphere, about 96% of all the air is below you. We like to tell students that the only thing that flies higher than our balloons are satellites and astronauts.
Wow, and you make them, or is it something, a kit you buy? What's the deal?
You make them, but you can buy kits, you can buy parts and pieces, and you put something together.
Well, tell us you were explaining some of the technology that's on yours. Could you tell us about it?
Well, it starts with the GPS receiver. So we're going to get our position in three dimensions and transmit that over amateur radio. And then on the ground, we can receive those position reports with our amateur radios on the ground. And we can track the positions of these balloons. But there's a computer on board that will record data. So, for instance, I'm going to record cosmic rays. I have a Geiger counter, and I'll measure cosmic ray counts as we go up. I also have a weather station, so I'll get temperature, pressure, relative humidity. And then also, I have cameras and video cameras, so I'll get some video of the liftoff and some pictures of the ground as we're flying over Iowa.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about high-altitude ballooning with Mike Morgan and Paul Verhaeghe. Well, then what do you do with this data?
Well, if it's a student project, the students will develop the data, analyze it, and they're using the scientific method where they've put together a hypothesis, and then they use the data to see if their hypothesis came true or not. Some of the data, like if it's photography, it's just really fun to get good pictures up at 100,000 feet. We're talking about 20 miles up in the air, so it's some pretty spectacular pictures of the Earth and of the blackness of space.
Well, now, for those of us that aren't used to using thinking about these images, 20 miles up, what are we seeing? That goes up over Pella. What are we seeing 20 miles up? I suspect we're seeing much of the state of Iowa beyond. How far are we seeing?
Well, I think visually it'll go, if you could see it, totally, you could see about 400 miles radius up there. Miles. So 800 miles circle looking down from our balloon satellites.
So you're seeing much of the Midwest.
Well, we're seeing quite a bit of Iowa, and yeah, you could see, if it was a very clear, dry day, which unfortunately Iowa doesn't have a lot of, you could see both rivers, Mississippi and Missouri River.
And so then do you compile this data? Do you send it to scientists elsewhere, or does it, you know, just sit on your shelf?
Well, there are some groups that fly experiments for NOAA. And for the Weather Service, and they're doing some pretty specific and detailed research using balloons, which are much less expensive than a rocket and a satellite, but they're using our balloon systems to get up to the 20-mile level and do a lot of atmospheric research. The graduate students will also be doing research as part of their experiments. But when we're down into the grade school levels, what we're really trying to do is just introduce the fun and excitement of science and technology and maybe try to light a spark under a few of our students so they'll pursue those type of careers in the future.
Well, and this is pretty darn exciting. I mean, up in the air, all the latest technologies, all kinds of gizmos and gadgets, but most of them are within, I mean, like a GPS, I have it in my phone, a video camera. A lot of us are used to this technology now, right?
That's correct. It is. A lot of it is just standard off-the-shelf technology, but we're applying it in ways that students can do science experiments, you know, spreadsheets to analyze data to measure conditions that you can't possibly go up and measure yourself. It's lethal in your space. So they're basically doing a poor man's space program. They get to design this thing. That's an engineering project to design the capsule. Then we go ahead and launch it for them. The data comes back that's got to be converted using a spreadsheet, so they're using some technology to do that. They graph the results, and they can learn something that they, you know, that you could get out of a science textbook. But if you do it yourself, you're more likely to remember the results.
Oh, yeah. And I can see where the graduate students and the college students probably would come up with hypotheses, but I mean, right now I'm sitting here thinking, what kind of a question or hypothesis would I propose about, you know, space and weather and wind, and nothing comes to mind. How do you teach them enough to be able to ask those kinds of questions?
Well, that's one of the purposes of our GPSL conference, is to share those kind of ideas across the different groups so that we do come up with new and exciting things to do with our students. If you're in the seventh grade level, it's pretty hard to teach a lot of electronics and a lot of technology. So we let them do things like fly maybe seedlings, or they like to fly eggs to see if the eggs will burst open or not. We've flown ultraviolet beads and see if the beads turn colors and things like that, so they can get a taste of that. Our eighth graders here in Pella just flew a weather station. And they had learned quite a bit in their earth science about weather and atmosphere, and they just wanted to prove what the textbooks had taught them. So they were actually able to measure exactly what the textbooks would have predicted. So they had a great time flying that project. And then the projects here in Pella for the high schools, both Pella Christian and Pella High, they range from all kinds of things, like the poor man's humidity meter using infrared poor man technology, I guess I'd call it. They've tried to measure the speed of sound at high altitudes with sonar detectors. We've tried to launch a glider, which failed, and that's great because then students get to go through the failure analysis side of engineering and learn why it failed and what would they do differently. So, yeah, we try to put together all kinds of different activities and projects for them. We actually split them up into project teams, so we give them that taste of what it would be like if you're working for a large company and doing a special project for that company. So we have teams developing decoding devices. We have one team that's in charge of the power supply, because you have to figure out how many batteries to put up there, what kind of batteries, do you use solar cells or don't you use solar cells? So there's all kinds of opportunities to learn how science and technology is really applied in the real world.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about high-altitude ballooning with Mike Morgan and Paul Verhaeg.
You have this short conference, this short event, but it sounds like you guys are almost 24/7, 365 with this stuff, aren't you?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I've flown 114 flights since 1996. I write magazine articles on this. My dissertation was on this. So it's I literally eat and breathe near space. I'm doing this stuff all the time. One thing I like to add is we talk about students doing science experiments and making hypotheses. A lot of students understand that it gets colder the higher your altitude goes. It's easy to give them a temperature sensor to measure that. And what they're going to find out is the temperature did decrease until you get to about 50,000 feet. Then the temperature starts increasing again. That's a discrepant event that most students probably don't expect. And then they now have to learn why that's happening. And they'll learn that they're actually in the stratosphere, and the stratosphere gets warm because it's collecting, it's blocking ultraviolet light with its ozone, and that warms up the stratosphere, but also protects us from damage from ultraviolet radiation. So it's a good science experiment for them, but conceptually it's very simple. It'll be discrepant, because they'll see something they weren't expecting in most cases, and they have an opportunity to learn a lot because of that. And 10 years from now, they're going to remember that. They're not. You can tell them in a science classroom that the stratosphere gets warmer because of ozone. But if they go measure that themselves, they're more likely to remember that for a longer period of time.
Oh, yeah. It's not sitting at a desk and somebody spoon-feeding it to you. You're creating the data. I mean, you're making the observations. You're using the equipment. That's a whole new kind of understanding.
And that's what we hope to show our students is that through these hands-on, real-life experiences, we hope that they'll take that with them and maybe consider STEM-oriented careers. And if not, we're going to make a memory. And our goal here in Pella is to have fun, make memories, and introduce students to science and technology.
Now, do you try to plug it into the, I don't know, into larger contemporary issues beyond it? Well, I'm thinking, for example, I'm in the radio business, and the radio business, we're in the weather business, and we're seeing this sequester now impacting, you know, information that radio stations and weather stations are getting across the nation, which is a big deal to us. Do you try to give them a perspective on why science matters, for example, why it should be funded?
You know, in a lot of cases, you can integrate that. So you want to get some kind of a political science type of course involved with that. My focus is about teaching the science primarily and finding ways of teaching the science. But you could add social studies to a program like this, geography to a program like this, more mathematics to a program like that. So it's up to the teacher and the creativity of the teacher to add issues like that.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, the environment is on everybody's mind. And so being able to measure things in the upper atmosphere that may or may not be pollutants are things that are on our kids' minds, and they want to try to measure those things and put it into the bigger picture of what's happening in our atmosphere. But we also include a lot of other type of activities, like some of our groups have PR people. And they're in charge of writing articles about the Balloon Project in their local school papers. They're in charge of photography. A lot of them have put together slideshows after the fact so that they could make a presentation as part of their classroom activities. We have people that are in charge of budget. And we talk about usually budgets in terms of money, but in our program we also have to talk about budgets in terms of the weight of the experiments. And so they're monitoring the budgets of the money and the weight of the projects so that we can stay within our budgets. And they put together spreadsheets to monitor that. So although we're pushing science and technology, there's opportunities for everybody to get involved in our experiments.
Anything else you'd like to tell our listeners today that I might not have known enough to ask?
Well, in terms of Pella itself, just be aware that we are in the school systems. We do look for funding so that we can stay in the school systems. We're totally free to the school systems. We provide our own our budgets through grants. And we'll be back into the high schools, and we'll be back into the grade schools next year, trying to encourage kids to get involved.
I guess one thing to talk about, we talk about taking photographs, and you think that those are nice pictures, and they are. But when you take a picture looking straight down at 100,000 feet, your picture is going to show an area about 17 miles across. And you can make maps and look at resource utilization with something like that. Forestry, you could look at rivers and cities and kind of get an impact on the size of cities and what that's doing to forests, for instance. So a lot of social issues. And even with pictures, you know, you can get some of that information.
And the kids are getting to learn about all of this.
It's all technology. It's like the poor man's space program. The space program appeals to a lot of young kids. If we can hook them early with the program before they get out of elementary school or before they get out of junior high and keep that interest in science, they're going to help maintain that as they go into high school and college. And this is one tool to do that.
Thanks to Mike Morgan and Paul Verhaeghe for contributing to the program. For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.